Well, hello and a very warm welcome indeed to Quadriga, coming to you from the heart of Europe. And our focus is on this weekend's elections to the European Parliament, where it has been widely assumed that populist far-right parties might grab as many as a quarter of all the seats in the Parliament. But then, scandal in Austria and the collapse of the country's coalition government between Conservatives and the populist right, this after secretly filmed video footage emerged, apparently showing the leader of the far-right Freedom Party promising state contracts to a woman posing as the niece of a Russian oligarch. So, on the eve of a watershed election for Europe, our question here on Quadriga this week is, video scandal, election blow to Europe's far right? And to discuss that question, I'm joined here in the studio by Matthew Karnichnik, chief Europe correspondent for Politico. And he says the Austrian video makes it harder for the far right to deny who they really are. And also with us is Deutsche Welle's own Emmanuel Chaz. The French-born correspondent believes that it's make or break for the Union. Amidst the demise of Austria's far right, Sunday's election outcome will seal the fate of Europe, she says. And a very warm welcome too to Karen Taylor, a political activist and consultant affiliated with Germany's Social Democrats, who argues that we should not be shocked when racist, anti-constitutional and criminal right-wing populists do and say things that are racist, anti-constitutional and criminal. Interesting. Thank you all three for being here today. Thank you for those statements at the top of the show. Emmanuel, I'd like to begin with you. And as you will be well aware here in Germany, the term that everybody's using to talk about the importance of this election this weekend is a Schicksalswahl. It's a sort of a very heavy German term, destiny and fate. But you have said yourself it will seal the fate of Europe. What do you mean?
Well, it definitely feels like it, because if the populists do win a majority of seats in the European Parliament, we do know that they don't intend to keep Europe as it is. They want to make it implode, basically. So what's at stake on Sunday is the fate of Europe.
And your president, Monsieur Macron, has said never before has Europe been in such danger. Tell me a little bit more about his fears there.
Well, you know, last week, Steve Bannon, the former Trump advisor, was in France to support Marine Le Pen. So we see all the populist parties across Europe unite. And what we see there is that there's a unity of those parties in the will of wanting the dismantling of Europe. The thing is that they managed to show unity while every other party shows division, and that is very dangerous.
Matthew Karnichnik, there has been a tendency in the past to sort of look at European elections as sort of a little bit boring, where the people of Europe don't know who their politicians are, don't really care, don't vote very much. Has your imagination been fired up this time round? Has it even proved a little bit entertaining, perhaps, the whole process? Has it been different?
It has been a bit different, and it's certainly been entertaining, and the strength of the far right is obviously something that I think has made a lot of people pay more attention to this campaign than they normally would. I'm not convinced that it's going to bring the masses of voters to the ballot box that some people are hoping for, and that will be a very important factor in how well the far right does. I don't think that there's a danger that they'll win. All the polls suggest that there'll be solid backing again for the mainstream parties. But the far right will do well, and it will allow them, presumably in the years to come, to gum up the system a bit in Brussels and in the EU.
To gum up the system a bit. Before we talk about that, let's just rewind a little bit and talk about this video that has emerged in Austria. Tell us what, in essence, the story is there.
Well, the story is basically that the video was taken surreptitiously over a 7-hour period, and you had a couple of people posing as, you know, these shady Russian figures trying to buy influence into Austria in various ways. And there we see the head of the Freedom Party, Heinz Christian Strache, offering to do deals with them and sort of brainstorming.
It's astonishing.
About
Let's
it.
Be honest, it's truly astonishing.
It's breathtaking. And I think that's why he had to resign within 12 hours of the video being being released. Sebastian Kurz, the Chancellor of Austria, called new elections within 24 hours. So if there's anything good about what happened in Austria over the weekend, I think we can say that it showed that in a Western European democratic country that the institutions are still working despite the influence of the far right there. It's important to remember that the Freedom Party was a member of the government and had more than a quarter of the votes in the last election.
Which was different from most other populist right-wing parties around Europe.
Right.
They were in government.
Right. And they have just been much more successful over the years in Austria than they have in other countries. This is the second time in recent years that they were a member of the governing coalition.
Karen Taylor, one of the topics of our discussion today is inevitably going to be values. And I have a quote from the woman who is Germany's justice minister and who is the lead candidate for the Social Democrats in this European election, Katharina Barley. And what she says is, will Europe remain liberal, cosmopolitan and based on cooperation, or will it become authoritarian and nationalistic and full of hate? Do you share her assessment?
Absolutely. We see that in Europe we have this division and this polarization of people who want more integration, of people who want more unity of the European context, and on the other side, people who try to stress on their national context as people and parties, must say, who would rather pull out of Europe than continuing this, one must say, success story of Europe. Mm. And within this frame, it's not enough to only dismantle Europe, but to really put pressure and to endanger minorities, to spread fear and to spread hate, be it on social media or even on the streets. So this question of having this two coalition is not only important when we regard Europe, but it also regards every single citizens within their prospective home countries.
Mm, but when we talk about values like cosmopolitan values, for example, it's very difficult at this point in time because there are so many ordinary voters who are increasingly proud of saying that they are not liberal indeed. Liberal is for them a dirty word. They're proud to say we are illiberal. And the question is sort of what to do.
Well, as the lead candidate of the Social Democratic Party, it's absolutely obvious why she stressed on these values rather than on the conservative values, or if you would rather look at the rural area and maybe even the right wing values, if you could call them as such. So it's for me, it's not surprising that she talked about these values, because what we've seen in the past is that people who would consider themselves liberal and who would consider themselves being part of an urban movement, they were too quiet in the past. Their voices and also their votes were not enough in order to hold back this right-wing movement. So we need these people now to see the importance they have in order to sustain the Europe as we have it.
Manuel, you are nodding.
Yeah, I was nodding about that. This just makes me think of the situation in France, where we have the Yellow Vest movements, which was quite representative of people having the feeling they weren't heard. And that is a major impediment for Indian upcoming elections for Emmanuel Macron, because he's the pro-European candidate which has the more chances, whose party has the more chances to gather the most votes. But he's not liked by a lot of French people. And who is the party who shows an understanding to the problems of the citizens, according to their propaganda? It is the Rassemblement National of Marine Le Pen, which has a nationalistic agenda, which is completely paradoxical. They run for office in the European Union, which is a transnational, which transcends those nationalism, yet they want to be elected at the European Parliament in order to develop their nationalist agenda.
OK, before we move on, let's just listen to a short extract from that video we've been referring to, where the far-right Freedom Party leader talks about helping the Russian oligarch to take over the Kronenzeitung, that is one of Austria's most widely circulated newspapers.
As soon as she takes over the Krone paper, As soon as that happens, we have to talk openly. We have to sit down together. This, this, and this is what we have at the Krona. 3-4 people. We have to push them. 3-4 people have to be dumped. And we'll bring in 5 new ones right away, which we'll build up. That's the deal.
Matthew, one commentator suggests that this video, quote, leaves the European far right in disarray and plays into the hands of centrist and leftist forces ahead of this weekend's election. What do you say?
I don't know if I would go that far. I think that might be wishful thinking on the part of that commentator. I certainly think that it does show who these people really are, what the far right really means in terms of the democratic values of a country. There certainly will be a huge effect in Austria. It will be interesting to see what the effect of this is in Germany, because the Freedom Party has had very close ties to the Alternative for Germany party here in Germany. There's been a lot of consultation going back and forth, and there are plenty of pictures out there showing the leaders of the AfD together with the leaders of the Freedom Party, which the other parties in Germany over the past week have been very happy to send around. So I think that there might be an effect there. What the effect is beyond there, it gets a little bit more difficult to predict, because people like Matteo Salvini in Italy or Marine Le Pen in France will say, well, that's Austria, that has nothing to do with us. And, you know, we'll see what effect it has. But there is no doubt, I think, that what this video shows is what's at stake for Europe with this rise in populism.
And what's at stake in terms of the freedom of the press, quite explicitly, in that sequence that we just listened to?
Well, absolutely. And I think this is one of the main reasons that Strache, who was vice chancellor in Austria there, had to resign right away, because people saw that this is just, you know, completely beyond the pale. And, you know, and another aspect to this is that the paper that we were talking about is not just one of the most popular newspapers in Austria. It's one of the most read newspapers in the world on a per capita basis. It reaches almost half of the Austrian population every day. And not just that, but it already is a right-wing paper and already supported the Freedom Party. So people were wondering, why would he want to take even more influence over this? And it just shows that, you know, the way these far-right minds are working. He referred to Viktor Orban in Hungary and said, you know, well, we want to have a media landscape like that in Hungary. And in Hungary, Orban has basically taken control through his cronies of the entire media establishment. And I think that has to be quite shocking, not just to people in Austria, but in the rest of Europe as well.
Emmanuel, I know this is an aspect of the story very close to your heart. In Germany, it's very important, because people are presently, these days, are celebrating the post-Second World War constitution that Germany is so rightly proud of. Freedom of the press is one of the sort of the cornerstones of that constitution. And I know there's a sort of a French aspect to this story that you can tell us about.
Yeah, exactly. When Viktor Orban was elected in Hungary, I was quite shocked by seeing what was happening to the press in Hungary. And yet, if you look at France at the moment, yesterday, one of the lead journalists from newspaper Le Monde, Ariane Chemin, was convoked by the Homeland Security Office to answer for her work for Le Monde. And she's the fifth French journalist.
Fifth
French journalist having been asked to give an account about her work. She's been reporting on the Benalla scandal. So there's a wave of kind of intimidation from the government towards journalists in a country where no one would think that the press was in danger. And that is quite worrying.
And Karen, I'd like to come back to your quote that intrigued me very much at the start of the show, when you said we should not be shocked when racist, anti-constitutional and criminal right-wing populists do and say things exactly of that nature. Make the case for the charge that you are making of racist, anti-constitutional and criminal.
Well, we've seen with the slogan of the Freedom Party in Austria, Austrian money for Austrian people. These are structures which you could link to the mafia, for example, which I would see as anti-constitutional. We've seen, and that's not an only case. We've seen that in Germany with the Alternative for German for Germany, the party which is also part of the Bundestag right now.
It's the leading opposition party, it has to be said. You know.
Absolutely, absolutely. Mm. Where we also have scandals linked towards donations, illegal donations for the party. We've seen it in France, where European money was illegally derived into the party directly. So all these cases, I would say it's the nature of these right-wing populist parties. All these cases are out there. And still people are reluctant to see the reality behind these parties, and even more the discussions they lead. If I look at the German Bundestag, for example, the threatening discussions for minorities in Germany, it doesn't only stay in the Bundestag, but it leads to consequent actions on the streets. If an AfD, an Alternative for Germany, a mandate uses the word hijab girl, in a really deliberative way, this leads to actions on the streets. Women with hijab get they'll be spat at on the street. People tear their hijab from their head. A pregnant woman has been punched in the stomach. So we see that the sentiment of this parties is something which we already see on the streets and which is endangering for people of minorities.
OK, let's find out a little bit about what the far-right Europe's far-right Eurosceptic leaders have to say. One figure stands out, of course, that's Italy's Matteo Salvini. He's head of the party simply known as the League, and he invited some of his populist allies to Milan, the northern Italian city, at the weekend in a show of strength.
He loves a good show. To the dulcet tunes of Puccini, Matteo Salvini, head of the Lega Nord, invokes his vision of a new right-wing European alliance. And he loves drama. The European election, he says, is a matter of life and death.
We are experiencing a historical moment, so important that we need to do everything we can to free this country, to free this continent from the illegal occupation that Brussels has been orchestrating for many years.
She, too, wants to see a European revolution, an awakening of the people. Marine Le Pen, France's right-wing figurehead.
We don't want this European Union anymore that has brought the ill winds of globalization upon Europe.
They want to form a European alliance of people and nations, ideally with Poland, Hungary, and the UK. But within the European Parliament, the nationalist leaders are anything but unified. How strong is Europe's right wing?
Karen, you were just making the case against the far right, and Matteo Salvini would make it a battle, as he sees it, between the elites, the European Brussels elites on the one hand, and the ordinary working people of Europe on the other. And he would say that many of those ordinary working people are being left behind, that the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer. Do you have any sympathy for that case? Because that's where a lot of the, I guess, the fear, the aggression, the hate is coming from.
Absolutely. As a Social Democrat, I absolutely can relate to the essence of the poorer getting poorer and the richer getting richer, which is a reality we see in Germany and in Europe as such. But the problem of the right-wing populists is the answer they find to that question. The answer they find to that question is we need to exclude people of minorities, we need to exclude people of color, and we see that people who I would call the victim in this case are actually the perpetrators and are actually the people we need to fight against. And that's the problem here. What we need is to find solutions. I believe in a very strong European integration. I believe in workers' rights, for example, and also a minimum wage. Mm. So if we talk about these issues, let's talk about these answers and not pinpoint hate and exclusion of people who are already in marginalized positions.
Matthew, Germany's broadsheet Die Zeit says in the past they wanted to destroy the EU. Now the nationalists want to take over. What do you make of that?
I don't think that's really true, actually. I think that they still want to destroy the EU, but they want to take over first in order to destroy the EU. Because in the past, they've been quite open about wanting to destroy the EU, as we heard in the clip of Marine Le Pen there, saying that the EU was kind of the root of all evil and that it needed to be basically destroyed from within. Instead of being so explicit about it now, they're saying that they want to reform the EU, but they leave open what that exactly means. On the other hand, I'd be careful to assume that these parties are going to be able to coordinate with one another very closely, because they are quite different in nature. They're also very unstable, as we've seen with the Austrian example. They're very volatile because of the internal dynamics in the parties. And on a lot of key issues, they do not agree with one another. For example, Marine Le Pen and Salvini are very sort of fond of Russia and Vladimir Putin and have really tried to curry favor with him over the years. Whereas in a country like Poland, they're very anti-Russia. Poland also has a far-right government in place. And Poland, for example, is also very pro-EU. People don't want to leave the European Union. And I think that's also true in some of these other countries. Even though the parties are very Eurosceptic, as it were, there's still large majorities in most of these countries that support European Union membership. So I think this is going to be an interesting debate in the coming years, but I don't think that Europe is going to fall apart as a result of it. But it does make things less stable than they have been.
One name we haven't so far mentioned in our debate is the erstwhile sort of most powerful woman in the world, the most powerful woman in Europe, Angela Merkel. She has been speaking out on Europe and its future in the run-up to this weekend's vote. And here's one thing that stood out. Let's listen.
Our values mean that we can be proud of our country and still build up Europe at the same time. Patriotism and the European Union are not mutually exclusive. Nationalism is the enemy of the European project, and in the final days before the election, we need to make that clear, my friends.
Angela Merkel there, Emmanuel, saying in essence that Europeans can be nationalists, can be patriotic about their own country, but they can also be internationalists and they can be patriotic about Europe. What have they got to be patriotic about?
What we just heard the German Chancellor say is that Europe was built on common values, and those values are tolerance and being open-minded and cooperating with one another. And the path that would be taken if nationalist parties would gain more seats in the European Parliament would be that of isolationism, not only from country to country, but also from Europe towards the world. And that is something that represents a great danger for the common values that are those of Europe.
That all sounds very good, but the vast majority of, according to the figures, the vast majority of European voters, European citizens, believe the system is broken and is going to disappear within the next 10 years. This is a massive crisis we face.
There are, I think, and also rightly so, a lot of people are disappointed by Europe. You see in France, for example, farmers. There's one farmer every 3 days who commit suicide because they can no longer have a viable, viable work project, and that is because of a lot of European directives which were imposed on workers that don't have those European goals in mind in their everyday lives. So people are rightly so disappointed, but it's only with changes coming from within that we can reform Europe. It's not by completely destroying it.
Karen, people are saying that Europe will crumble within 10 years. Are they right to fear that future?
I hope not. I hope that we do take this moment, we do take this momentum to actually change the structure of the European Union. We see a lack of power which derives from the people. So what we need to do is to strengthen the European Parliament, because for now we have with the Council a counterpart who has to look at national interests. per se. So what we do need is, when it comes to the European legislation, we need a very strong counterpart, which I only see in the European Parliament, which will have the legitimation by the European people.
Matthew Karnichnik's vision for the EU after the next election.
Well, I suspect that the EU will continue to muddle along, because there's not yet a consensus for the type of reform that Karen's talking about that might develop one day. But I think, you know, what people really have to ask themselves is what's the alternative right now? If you want to get out of Europe, would that really be better? And even for people in France and elsewhere who might not be particularly pro-EU, when they look at the details of what that would mean, they often conclude that the alternative is even worse than the current reality.
Oh dear, oh dear. Thank you for those thoughts. Nevertheless, thank you all three for being here today on Quadriga. We'll be talking about the upcoming European election. Do stay with us. We'll be covering the election as it unfolds over the weekend. Thanks for joining us. I hope we've given you plenty of food for thought. Tschüss and bye-bye.